The short weeks are upon us, and if you're confused, it's Friday, thank goodness, and this is the week that was. I'm Juliette Talevi. My co-host Simon Brown is whooping it up in the surf, and Sasfin Security's David Shapiro swam here as Joburg's rains turned biblical. David, welcome. I'm glad you got here dry. And it's been a really rough couple of days for the markets. In fact, we've been taking a bit of a bath.
It doesn't stop raining. Really. I've never known Joburg where it just doesn't stop raining. And in Cape Town, everybody's got their shirts off and boiling. And this is where, that's where the water should be. It shouldn't be here. Trees are falling down. Walls are falling down. Everything's chaos.
Everything's topsy-turvy. I think that's an analogy for the market.
And the markets, there's good news and bad news. I think the bad news is, I think we all feel decidedly miserable about where the markets are, that they've come back, global markets as well. The good news is, for the first time, I actually feel like buying something. You know, values have come down. I'm talking on the top heavy side, where I think things are starting to look cheap. And I would say that in global markets as well. Once you get rid of all this noise, global economies are still doing well. And even in our market, I think the heavyweights that we've avoided are actually looking very attractive.
But you know, Frans de Klerk made an interesting point last night, and he says, oh, you know, technical analysts get compared to bone throwers, and there's a lot of disparagement about the use of charts. But he says so many of the charts that he's looking at on the big weights, or the heavyweights, the big cap stocks like British American Tobacco or AB InBev, are rolling over, which, though they look like bargains from where they were in October last year, they're not finished, the sell-off. And he's really worried about that.
So not finished the sell-off, but I think you're going to get to levels now where they are attractive. So what you do in a situation, you wait for the bottom to be formed. So the bottom's not formed over price, it's formed over time. But we are getting to levels now where they are becoming a lot more attractive than they were. You know, there was an uneasy feeling after that January spurt. When markets spurt like that, it's always unhealthy. You like markets to ratchet up, not to just spike up and then come all the way down. We've done that, and I think it's a bit of time. It could be a couple of weeks, but I think we're going to get into maybe the second half of the year where I think it's very attractive to start buying again.
Just the one last comment on markets before we move on to what happened this week. Moody's makes its decision known this evening as far as the ratings of us is concerned. If we are downgraded, do you think that's going to really put a spoke in the Ramaphosa?
I think Ramaphosa is gone. I think it's dying each day, or it's losing its momentum. I don't think it's there anymore, to be honest. I think kind of disappointment that there hasn't been fast action. Yes, there are things happening, and this one's leaving, and this one's being replaced, but overall, there's not a lot of progress. I think land reform, people are still very uncertain. And no one really knows what this is going to mean, particularly if you've got the EFF around, you know. And as we've said here before on the show, you know, if people say you don't panic, the first thing you do is panic, you know. And I think a lot of that is actually filtering out, and I don't think we're seeing it.
Yeah. Well, also making news this week, Floyd the fascist goes for the jugular. Guedes goes limp on Zwane's charter abomination. Vladimir Putin's all in as Russia goes to the polls, and all that data that you shared on Facebook has gone places. Some internationals' results are a horror. Sasfin needs a bit of a break. Nuspass gets to cash in on its one-trick pony, and trade war is on, folks. But don't think that the Chinese aren't going to retaliate.
The Chinese will be really sort of pushing back very hard on this. And let's not forget, by 2022, the forecast is, on current trend, that the largest importer in the world will be China, no longer the US. So we're seeing that not so subtle shift in balance of power. And I think this will start to, whether it's a conversation with G20 or not going forward, but this will be sort of a general sort of, I think, tone of all things trade related in the coming years.
So now, what do you think the net effect of yesterday's decision by the Trump administration to impose tariffs on about $60 billion worth of imports? We don't actually know what those imports are yet. Yeah. They're going to become clear in the next few days. Is going to be, China's not going to take this lying down.
No, they won't. And we don't know the consequences of it. Markets' first reaction is to react negatively and to build in the worst news, the bad news. I don't think it's going to be that bad, which is the way Trump works. You know, he's shock and awe. You know, first shock you, and then he kind of pulls back on where he was. I think it's his style that worries people. It's not what he wants to do, because I think there are a lot of companies who feel maybe that, you know, China have been abusing intellectual property. They haven't been behaving well. But it's the way he delivers it that irks people, you know, that make you dislike
really
him.
It really just gets up your nose.
You know, he's got this attitude. It's almost bullying type attitude, you know, which you saw at school or wherever you were. You always had these chaps who you just, you just wanted to beat them up. They were so arrogant.
I know, they
so
bring out your basest instincts. They bring out your desire to headbutt someone, really. And that's the way that you would win an argument. And it's just not the way to win an argument.
Well, and he's not a unifying force. Do you know what I mean? The U.S. always used to be, used to guide the world in whatever it did, whatever it is, whether it was economics or politics or defense and so on. We always look to the United States. Now you look at them and say, is this the U.S.? Mm. You know, do I really want to be there? Do I really want to live there and salute the flag or stand up with the flag? Or would I really get proud if I met Mr. Trump? Not at all. I just think that they're losing that force in the world. They're losing that appeal. Nobody really wants to be a United States citizen anymore.
Mm. Well, maybe they want to be Russian instead, and we'd love to know what big bad Vlad thinks of it all. So far, though, he's reveling in post-poll glory, although the same is probably not true of all his serfs.
We will think about the future of our great motherland, about the future of our children, and by doing so, we are surely destined for success.
It is, first of all, ensuring the growth of the Russian Federation economy, giving it an impetus of innovation. This is development in the sector of healthcare, education, industrial protection, and, as I've said before, of infrastructure and other areas crucial for moving the country forward and lifting the standard of living for our citizens.
Not sure all the citizens agree with Vladimir Putin, but they came out in their droves to
back him. They were forced to come out in their droves. They were forced to come out.
Isn't that a great way to hold an election?
I know, exactly.
I'm sure the EFF is looking on with
No one gets 73% of the vote. No one gets that kind of vote. You know, you're not that popular. But that's why we're so depressed. You know, that's why we're sitting here like this, because you've got Trump on the one hand, you've got Putin on the other hand. Who do we look to? I don't know. I don't know who's a world leader anymore. Haven't heard much from Mrs. Merkel. I'm not sure she's going to fill that place. Theresa May, certainly not. She's okay.
I mean, you know, you've got the Tory politicians throwing fish into the Thames River as an act of protest. Really, these are not people to inspire one to the great fight.
So where do we look to for leadership? Floyd, I don't know where, you know. It's really a depressing thought to actually look at world politics today.
Oh, well. Well, maybe we're in a post-politics world, and that in itself shouldn't be so depressing.
I look to Jeff Bezos. Mark Zuckerberg.
Okay. The capitalist of the world.
Capitalist of the world, yeah.
Well, as we said back home, it's been a mixed bag on the Ramaphosa front. Tom Moyane has been suspended. That's a big old tick. Well done, Cyril. Gold star for you. But speaking of fat ticks, Gwede is hanging on to the latest mining charter like a groupie at an EFF gathering. Colour us confused.
My argument is 30% now, if we agree on it, let's meet it and comply with that. If we grow it, then it should be an issue that is happening systematically as we empower people. And as people get empowered, there will be more capacity to actually grow the ownership of a black South African, the historical disadvantaged South African.
We need something that that firstly just is not based on reviewed mining charter 3 that was published in June. We need something that certainly is going to be taking transformation forward and is going to be accepted by all parties. So the idea that we're just going to dust off the reviewed mining charter and correct it is not correct. I mean, we are going to be putting new ideas on the table. We are going to be reviewing what has worked, what hasn't worked, and those kind of things do need to be into a new charter.
I mean, you would have wanted to see Gwede Mantashe coming in and just saying, right, let's just scrap it and start from the beginning, because it's deeply flawed. Thibelo Chabane says, you know, you don't want to just dust off this really flawed piece of legislation. Start afresh. And yet government can't seem to, you know, say, okay, let's move forward.
They can't
without
move
the baggage
from where
of the last
were.
Few years.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you, what did you call it, Cydalforia, whatever it is slowly waning. You've got to look at mining with a fresh, you know, with a fresh look. Mining is a very, very risky investment. You dig holes in the ground and you hope what you hope you bring out what you thought was there. Then when you bring it out, you still got to convert it into something and sell it to people who might want it.
Yeah. And you don't know what price you're going to get for it.
You never know. And it's an exceptionally risky type of business. Therefore, people who invest in mines need a fairly decent return. Otherwise, they take their money and they put it into Amazons and Facebooks and Alphabets, etc., where they can get incredibly good returns. Why should they go into mining? And therefore, you've got to make it attractive for people to come and invest here. You've actually got to roll out red carpets and say, please, we have these natural resources. Can we use your skill and capital to create jobs here? Yeah. We don't want to do that. We want to put every kind of obstacle in the way of people who want to do that.
Mm, I know, it's perplexing. Mm. It's vexing. Well, if you were hoping for a little interest rate joy to lighten the mood, then here's Annabel Bishop to kill off that particular dream.
We think this 4% February outcome is the low point of the current inflation cycle. And then, as you said, moving forward into April, we've got a lot of tax increases coming in, not just the 1% hike in VAT, but also, of course, the sin taxes, alcohol, tobacco increases, mm-hmm. the fuel levy increases, which obviously can't be ignored, and of course, ad valorem taxes. And all of these are going to put upwards pressure on the inflation rate. We estimate by about maybe half to 0.6% this year, and of course, the first quarter of next year.
Mm. Speaking of inflation, 2% remains America's golden goal.
The job market remains strong, the economy continues to expand, and inflation appears to be moving toward the FOMC's 2% longer run goal.
So he was great.
I liked him. And if you listen to him very carefully, he was quite dovish. Dovish in terms of interest rate hikes, very positive on the U.S. economy, 2.7% this year, 2.4% next year.
The only question I have, and it was a tweet mentioned by Russell Lamberti, is you've got this great economy, unemployment at historic lows, inflation's low. Why is the dollar not stronger?
I think that has a lot to do with Mr. Trump. No, it does. You know, no one's quite sure where the trade wars are going. No one's quite sure also whether those tax reductions are going to give the desired result. I think at the moment things are favorable. But the dollar's going because I think people are a little, first of all, they're being attracted to other areas, but they're also a little concerned about the health of the deficits that might arise out of this.
Mm. Well, after the break, Facebook squirms and NASPAS makes all the headlines. Welcome back. That naughty, naughty Facebook. Although really, what did you think was going to happen when you went online and spewed everything about yourself that people may or may not want to know? Still, probably not that your details would be harvested in the bitterly contested US presidential race. Mark Zuckerberg's had a very bad week, but here he is to say sorry.
This was a major breach of trust, and I'm really sorry that this happened. You know, we have a basic responsibility to protect people's data, and if we can't do that, then we don't deserve to have the opportunity to serve people. So our responsibility now is to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And there are a few basic things that I think we need to do to ensure that. One is making sure that developers like Alexander Kogan, who got access to a lot of information and then improperly used it, just don't get access to as much information going forward.
What is improper use? I mean, if you go advertise what you ate for lunch or where you went and where you shopped, etc., what becomes improper use? You know, I understand in this case they exploited information that was given for a research project or supposedly for a research project that was then sold out for political aims or political goals. That's pretty scary and pretty frightening. But The millennials share everything.
Well, it's not just the millennials.
We like it, we don't like it. You know, we love it, we don't love it. You know, thumbs up, thumbs down. I mean, so at the end of the day, there must be an enormous amount of information there that is just waiting for everyone to use.
Well, I mean, isn't this the point? And a gent on Twitter mentioned that the product is actually the users. It's the advertisers that count for Facebook. That's why you're there, for them to sell things to you.
Well, they know exactly what you're looking at. They know which cookies you're using and so on, and they bring, you know, that's how they know what you want. And that's why you get those kind of adverts. How do they know I like this? Well, you told them. But, of course, they got to tighten up on security. You know, that's... I do a lot of tweets, and...
I try to be very selective.
Yeah. I really do. But every now and again, I'll see a string of people that follow me, and they're not real people.
You know, how do you know?
Well, I know, because this is their first tweet, or they've got a name like Gwedi4639278. You know, I say, well, what does all of that mean? You know, or they'll have Julieta,
for example,
whatever, some really strange name. So you know they're bots. You know that they're not real people. But I'm not quite sure what the purpose is going to be.
Why are they there? I cannot tell you.
I always look at pictures. I like to see, this is a picture of a... And they're not pictures, they're just faces. You know, that outline of a face.
Yeah.
So I like to know who's following me. Oh, that's a nice person.
Just maybe one last comment on this. Seeing as I am a Luddite that's ventured into the world of technology, of which I know nothing. Mm. But is there going to be a huge regulatory crackdown on these companies?
Do you think that's coming?
And not just Facebook, on Google as well.
On all of them. It has to be on that, simply because I think the information is being badly used, and the Russians are past masters at it, they're becoming masters of it, to do all kinds of naughty things. And if you watch the latest Homeland, you'll see just how naughty they are. You know,
blurring facts and fiction.
Yes, there's a blur between what they are, and you see how they do it. You know, and I think so. Yeah, it's pretty scary when you see what can be done. And we're victims of it, you know. We just lap it all up.
Willing accomplices, yep. I dare say. Mm. Well, staying in the only vaguely understandable world of big tech, NuthPass has made global headlines after deciding to monetize what is probably the best venture capital investment of all time, 125 billion rand to go and play. That is some freedom. So it sells a 2% stake in Tencent. It's the first time it's done so since 2001. Mm. It's held onto this. I mean, in 2001, it bought the stake for $32 million. Mm. It's now worth $170 billion. Yeah. So why not cash in? But there's been some...
Depends what they want to do with it. Because if I had my choice to buy Tencent or to buy NuthPass's other businesses, I would rather stay with Tencent. You know, that's my view as a NuthPass investor. If I had my choice, I'd rather buy Tencent.
So and would you still rather buy Tencent after the results came out this week?
They're very good results. You know, we get all carried away because they're spending. Why are they spending? To put more money back into their business so that they can increase the revenue. And analysts just get too involved in numbers, you know, worried that it's going to hurt margins down the line on guidance and so on. But, you know, where a company's increasing its revenue, I don't know, 40-50%, what more do you want? You know?
it depends on the price, I suppose, you're paying for that company. So the assumption is that it's going to increase its revenue or its profits more than that.
So we're doing discounted cash flow and saying, it's too expensive. But it's still a superb business that's going to grow as the Chinese economy grows, tariffs or no tariffs. So I think you're going to get the Chinese consumers increasing, playing games and so on. It's still a brilliant business. What do we take the money to put it into?
I mean, do you think NuthPass has got something up its sleeve? Or is this to satisfy the shareholder clamour around the discount that has emerged between NuthPass's value and Tencent's value?
I suppose if they would have said, we're going to use the money to buy back shares, I think that would have lifted NuthPass and said, no, we're going to put it into our other businesses. I think that brought NuthPass down. So I've been a big follower of NuthPass, but for choice, I'd rather go to Tencent. And if you look at the discount, if you've seen how that's grown over 2 years, it's massive. In other words, NuthPass is nowhere near keeping up with the pace at which Tencent has increased.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see the next steps. And it doesn't matter if it's online or the real world where you have to look at people, but companies are doing their best to monetize you, and some less well than others. Take Sun International, which spent 4.2 billion rand to produce, in the view of one colleague, something rather inferior to the temple of good taste, Monte Cassino. We mean, of course, Times Square and its TikTok.
It's not the basics of the problem there. I mean, I think Times Square has been a bit of a building site the last year. We opened in April the casino. The arena was only opened in November, and our hotel will now be open in March. So not fully operational, really. We're still quite optimistic. I think, you know, we're probably a little bit behind. We're well behind initial expectations, but certainly there's an opportunity still for growth as the development completes.
I've heard from some hardened gamblers that Times Square is just
tacky.
It's kind of rubbish, really. And if you're comparing it to Monte Cassino and you favour Monte Cassino, then I'm afraid we're up,
it is. Well,
up a dodgy creek.
Most of these places are made out of silicone or whatever you call. There's no, you know, they fake granite and so on, or fake marble.
Yeah, but 4.2 billion rand on fake marble.
That's a lot. Look, I'm not a gambler. I detest gambling institutions, you know, the slot machines, etc. I think stock markets give me enough of a kick on a daily basis. I don't have to go look at slot machines or go into casinos. But generally, when you do go in, it's really Las Vegas-y and, yeah, really. I don't know, B-grade movies.
I mean, I'd like to go to Las Vegas because I like a bit of tacky, but you want things to be obviously tacky, not... to be elegant and come across off
it's
as
far
badly.
From elegant, yeah.
But Sun International's results, so they've got this huge debt pile. They're going to go to the markets. I know the Financial Mail is working on a big cover story on whether or not Sun International is in the end stages of a business.
The first thing I always look at is the casinos. I go see how they've fared, and you can see the pressure that they're under. People are not going there anymore, and in this kind of environment where economy is under pressure, people are really struggling, consumers are battling it out there, the last place they're going to go is to a casino. I know we always thought that this was bulletproof and regardless people would go to casinos. I don't think they're going there. And we're not getting the tourists in. You know, if we could bring tourism in here, and this could be part of the stopover that you go to a casino because there are people who like it. But I don't think it's working. And Times Square is also just a bit disappointing.
Yeah. Well, if you've been lucky enough to go this week without choking, then here's a tasty little snippet. Your British American Tobacco shares may be in the toilet, but you'll be pleased to know that CEO Nick Durante is not suffering. He earned himself a 37% pay rise in 2017 to take home £11.4 million. Giddy up, Nick. In fact, one of your tweets this week was the late Nestle CEO who talked about why should he expect his staff to cut back and then take a huge salary and disproportionately large salary.
Yeah.
Certainly that mode of thinking, I think, is historic now. But this is...
it's exactly... How can you take home that kind of pay and then insist that the people below you start cutting costs, you know, drink out of paper cups or not pay for parking, don't use too many photostats, it's something, you know, you're wasting money, and you go home with this huge amount of paper, this huge amount of money. He used to come to work in a second-hand VW. Now, and he built the biggest food company in the world as well. So it's a lesson for all CEOs, you know, don't impose that. If you're going to spend like that, or you're going to pay yourself, then expect the people below you to misbehave or to misuse money or to waste.
I think that homily has fallen on deaf ears, David.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Especially our bankers.
Yeah. you had to sneak them in somehow, didn't you?
Yeah, all the time.
Well, that is where that's where we'll leave it tonight. David, thanks very much for joining us, going solo. That was the week that was. Have a good evening and a great weekend.